The following is brought to you by Mosaic Christian Church, a church for people who don't go to church. For more information, visit mosaicchristian.org.
Here's the question I want to spend the next 2 weeks trying to unpack and figure out. And the question goes like this. It's going to bother some of you. Why is it that so many of us who say, oh, I have faith in Jesus, aren't seeing any different results in our life than people who don't have faith in Jesus? There's no difference. We're not seeing any better results in our life because we say, I trust Jesus and he is who he says he is. Then people will say, that whole Jesus stuff is a bunch of garbage. Why are we're seeing the same results in our life? And by better results, here's what I mean. Claiming to have faith in Jesus doesn't seem to affect a lot of the big things of a life. At least according to our culture, all right? Meaning that whether you're a Christian or not, the divorce rate's the same. Whether you believe in Jesus or not. How many people are having affairs before marriage or after marriage, whatever that is. It's about the same whether you go to church or follow Jesus or not. It's the same with finances. You have dumb debt that we're kind of piling up, and I'm not throwing stones at anybody on that one. I'm in there, right? It doesn't affect generosity or selfishness. It doesn't make a difference on how we spend our money. So here's my question I want us to unpack, if you're willing to with me. It's like, other than giving us this warm, fuzzy feeling that no matter how bad we screw up our life and how many sins we committed, because Jesus died on a cross, after we die, we get to go to heaven. That's all good. But other than that, what difference is Jesus making in your life? And if you ask yourself that, and the answer comes back, honestly, not a lot. Why? Why? That's what I want to look at over these next couple weeks. And that's what Jesus is going to talk about as we look at this next farmer went out to sow some stuff, comparisons. We're going to look at what happens to these seeds that get sown in this field and then the plants that grow up out of them. And as we look at this metaphor, let's see if it explains anything about what is or maybe isn't happening in our lives. We've been in the book of Matthew for the last like month and a half in here. We're going to skip over to the book of Mark. It's the same story, just a different author, all right? And we're going to see how Mark relays what Jesus said. He's still sitting in that boat. There's people sitting on the shore listening to Jesus tell stories about farming that aren't really about farming. All right, so Mark chapter 4, verse 7. Free Bibles in the back. It's in your program. Here we go. It says this, other seed, so we've been looking at all these seeds. Other seed fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked it, and the plant yielded no grain. Now, time out. Before we even get into the Jesus comparison parts of here, all right, as I'm sitting in my office, and I don't know how many hundreds of times I've read this story or heard, sat in chairs like this and heard people like me teach about this story, but a couple of things really jumped out to me this week. One is when Jesus said some thorns grew up and choked those plants, I would say that half the audience was farmers, and all the heads started going, yeah, I got those thorns. I got vines like that in my field too, yeah. And see, here's the truth is, even in Israel today, a lot of that country is desert, all right? Meaning this, they're in the fields there are these vines and they're covered with thorns and they go right alongside the crops and then they go up and they literally choke out or overpower the good plants. Their roots, it's a desert, remember? The roots steal away what little moisture is trying to feed those plants, and then the thorns, their leaves actually go over top of your good plants and the sun can't get to them, all right? So that's a metaphor. But the second thing that really sticks out to me is this. In the first two seeds, hard ground and shallow soil, both of those seeds or those plants died, remember? Sun came out, they died. Or a bird came and took it away, all right? So they just died, but that's not what happens. These plants that we're looking at today, they continue to grow, apparently right up until harvest time. And then when it's time for the farmer to go out and reap what he sowed, guess what he finds? There's nothing there. A plant, but there's no grain. There's no harvest. The reason that plant was in the field, took up space and all that, the reason it existed, it didn't happen. And you got to think, when people were walking by that field, they probably went, look at that field, it's full of all that green stuff. All that stuff is growing in that field. That farmer's going to have an awesome, awesome harvest. But then when it's time for them to reveal what they really were at harvest time, what had been going on all during growing season, surprise, the farmer goes out and there's nothing there. There's nothing. There's no better harvest. There's no results. There's just nothing there. The farmer went out to reap what he sowed, and he reaped a big pile of nothing. I mean, he went out there to get food. There was no grain out there. He can't take it to the market. There's no money. He's not going to be able to buy food, which means this winter his family is going to suffer. Because of what's been happening in the field, or not been happening in the field. And again, this is a metaphor for life. Are you connecting the dots? So let's skip down to verse 18, because Jesus now explains, I wasn't talking about corn, I'm talking about people. So verse 18, it says this, and other people, are the ones sown among thorns. They are the ones who hear the word. I hear what Jesus says is true, all right? But here we go. The cares of the world, the deceitfulness of riches, and the desires for other things enter in and choke the word, and it proves unfruitful. So this is what I want to look at. We're going to look at these thorns. Jesus says there's some thorns that will choke the word, the truth of Jesus out of your life. What he says is true and better and cause your life, when you really need it to produce results, there won't be anything there. And here they are. If you're writing down, here's the thorns we're going to look at. The cares of this world, the worries of this life, different versions, all right? The deceitfulness of riches, all right? And the desires for other things. So let's look at that. So that makes, part of that makes sense. Watch out for the worries of this life. That makes sense, all right? You don't want to be a worried person. Oh, I'm worried all the time. So that, I want that out. That needs to go out of my garden, all right? So, and the deceitfulness of wealth. Again, I don't really understand that. We'll talk about that another time. All right, so, but anything that deceives you, you don't want anything that deceives you in your life, so it needs to go. But here's one more biggie that Jesus puts right up there, the big three, that can keep your life from producing anything good. Jesus warns, he says, look out for the desires for other things. To which, again, if I was sitting there on that beast listening to Jesus, I would have raised my hand. Excuse me, Lord, God of the universe. Hold on. That's a little vague. That's a little, all right. Like, what, could you be more specific? What things are we talking about? Is it those things? Because everybody knows it's those things. They shouldn't be in my life. Or is it these things over there? Just tell me which things. I'll make a list of all the things that can choke out God's truth out of my life. I'll yank those out by the roots. I'll go pile them over there. We'll burn them. And we'll never, ever have to worry about those ever again. To which Jesus would say, that's not what I said. You weren't listening. I didn't say things would choke Jesus out of your life. I didn't say things are bad. I didn't say things are your biggest problem. And there's no list of things you got to look out for. But see, the problem is not other things. It's the what? It's the desire for other things. Which things? All of them. Fill in the blank with anything. And it's not, is that good or is that bad? No, things aren't our problem. We're not going to talk about things today. It doesn't matter. If desire for anything other than what Jesus says, this is really true and this is best for your life and leads to a better way. If Jesus says, listen, if desires spin out of control, something different than what Jesus says, it'll choke Jesus out of your life. And your life could have produced better results, but it won't happen. Scott said it this way a couple months ago. I love this. He said this. He says, when a good thing becomes an ultimate thing, so there's nothing wrong with that thing because it's good. But when a good thing becomes an ultimate thing, ultimately that good thing becomes a destructive thing. Right? That's just true. So the problem is not things, evil things in my life, good or bad. It's out of control desire. And again, I mean, not to be sarcastic, but if I was sitting there listening to what Jesus said, I would have raised my hand again. Excuse me, Lord. Two more questions. First one, what do you mean by desire? Followed by, and could you define out of control? All right? So, or simply put, here's what I want to know when I get in the car here in a little while. What level of desire qualifies as out of control? That's what I need to know. All right? Because I'll probably go right up to that and then stop. Right? So anyway, so what level of desire qualifies as out of control? To which Jesus would have said, that's sure, absolutely. See, anytime Jesus or later, a couple guys we're going to look at, Paul and a guy named John, who they wrote big chunks of the Bible, whenever they use the word desires, all right, which is a Bible word, but you'll understand this, they're talking about these waves of emotion that come over you, like all at once and drive, I got to do this. And here's an easy example. Maybe you miss lunch or miss breakfast, something like that, and then all of a sudden you have this, oh, I've got to eat or I will just die. And you won't, well, eventually, all right, but not today. You just won't die, but it's that emotion that comes over going, oh, I gotta have that. If I don't eat that, if I don't do that, if I don't get that, if I don't own that, if I don't feel that, if I don't experience that, if I don't have sex with her, I'm telling you, I will just die. I mean, as a youth pastor, that was one of my number one conversations. Some high school guy go, if I don't sleep with her, I'm just gonna die. I'm going, dude, you won't die. You'll want to die, but you won't. No one's ever died for not having sex with her. It's just not true, all right? And he doesn't, and then he exploded. It was bad. But anyways, and here's what I'm talking, you know what I'm talking about right now, right? These desires that come over. And Jesus says, watch out. Those desires, those emotions, those feelings, those cravings for these all these other things are ruling your life. They're driving your life. They're defining your life. They're saying, go over here. I'm going over here according to my desire. My desires. And what Jesus says is these other things, just fill in the blank with anything, because the things aren't the dangerous part of what Jesus is talking about. It's desires that spin out of control that get us in trouble. And so here's what I want to do, all right? I want to look at two of the thorns. There's three. We're going to break it into 2 weeks. I want to look at two and then come back to the third one next week. So the cares of this world, the deceitfulness of riches, the desires for other things. And I want to skip over the deceitfulness of riches. We'll come back to that another time, all right? It has the same root cause and all that, but it deals with being tricked or deceived. So that one's different. I want to look at the other two because they have something to do with something that comes from inside of us. Yeah, someone tricked me on the other. This one comes from inside of us. So I want to look at this, the cares or the worries of what's going on in the world around you and out of control desire for other things. So if you have your Bible with you or you have your program, we're going to skip almost all the way to the end of the Bible. So like go to Revelation and then turn left about 20 pages. All right, so we're in 1 John chapter 2. John was actually there on the beach, maybe in that boat with Jesus. He's probably like 15 years old, 16 years old. He's writing down everything because he's trying to follow Jesus. And so years later, he takes what he learns there on the beach and he actually takes it and says, this is what Jesus taught me and I want to teach what he was talking about with these thorns. 1 John chapter 2, verse 15. He says this, do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of God, the love of the Father is not in him. So don't love the world. Now, let me kind of break this down and kind of everything a breath because there's some of you going, oh no, all right. When John says don't love the world, he's not talking about the earth. Not, you know, screw recycling, let's go. Now, that's not John, okay? He's not saying don't take care of birds and puppies. He's not saying don't love people in the world. That's not what he's talking about. What he's talking about is don't fall in love with the way this world runs. It's kind of like your computer has an operating system and that's everything has to run that way. He says, don't run your life the way this world says you have to run your life. Don't value people on what the world says is valuable. Don't judge yourself or other people or success based on what the world values. But let's not dumb it down. It's not just don't be mean to people like most people in the world are mean. See, this story about a farmer who goes out to sow seeds, it's always been going this direction. Jesus says, the reason I'm telling this story about corn in the first place is your life has to be rooted in faith. Faith. Your life has to be rooted in faith. Specifically, your life has to be rooted in this. Even if nothing else in your life makes sense, I trust Jesus. And there will be times when nothing in your life makes sense, and you have to decide if you trust Jesus or not. And it's Jesus. It's faith in Jesus alone. It's faith in Jesus alone. It's not faith in Jesus and there's these other things I got to have or my life won't be all right. It's not faith in Jesus and I got to do some other things or achieve some other things and then I'll be okay and my family will be safe. All right? Now, time out. Is it okay to want some other things in your life besides Jesus? I hope so. I got some cool stuff, all right? So it's possible I have Jesus, and I have a house. I have a couple cars, stuff like that. Is that bad? No. Is it okay to say I want to better myself? I want to be in shape. I want to work my way up the corporate ladder. I want to take this house and I want to kind of move into it. Is that bad? The answer is no, 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 no. But Jesus knows us. He never said that things and having things are the problem. Jesus knows, but that's not where most of us stop. Right? Most of us just keep going and we put so much value on the other things that the desire to get and achieve the other things chokes Jesus out of our life. What he says is right and true and better. It's just choked out of our lives. Not completely. Jesus isn't dead in our lives and we don't believe anymore, you know? No, no, but it knocks him down the list. Right? And again, you probably never put this in words, but doesn't this describe a kind of the conversation that you've unintentionally had with Jesus? It goes like this. Hey, Jesus, I want you in my life. I want you in my life. I need you in my life, especially that part after my funeral. I need you to show up then, right? All right, I do, all right? And if I get sick, I need you to show up at the hospital. And if somebody in my life gets hit by a car, I need you to be there. If I really screw up again, I need you to bail me out. I need you in my life, Jesus. I need you to be there for me. I want you, Jesus. I'd even say I desire you, Jesus. I would say it this way. Jesus, you are one of the things that I desire in my life. High on the list, top half, right? And I believe that if I can have you in my life and some of these other things, I won't have to worry or be afraid of anything. My family's going to be safe. My life will be complete. This is our life. I got this, I got this, I got Jesus, I got this, I got two of those and all this. And now my life is okay. And Jesus looks at us and goes, okay, be careful. Getting those other things, that's not the problem. But be careful because in your desire to have it all, the emotion of what's happening, you know, this afternoon or kind of the tyranny of the urgent of what's going to happen in your life this week, Jesus says it's going to push me way down on the list and eventually it's going to choke my truth out of your life. And here's the thing, I don't even think Jesus is judging us when he says that. I think he looks at us and goes, I think you really intend to get back to me. Right after you do these other things. I think your heart is, I'm going to go do these other things and then you'll get back to me. But Jesus says, I know what's going to happen. I know what's going to happen. And the best metaphor you can come up with is this. It's kind of like there's this plant growing in a field and there's these thorny vines right beside it and everything's going fine and it reaches over and it overpowers and it chokes it out. And here's what's going to happen. You're going to need me. Maybe not today, maybe next week, maybe next month. You're going to need me and I'll be there and I can take care of you. I promise I'll take care of you. Jesus won't be your problem. Here's the problem. Your faith in Jesus won't be able to support you. It won't produce anything. Because you're weak, unable to support you, not producing much of anything, faith, it got choked out months ago. Right? Like a farmer says, realizes my family's really, really hungry, and he goes out to the cornfield, which is full of thorns and vines, because he thought, it's okay. I can have corn in my field and a bunch of other stuff growing in my field, my life, all right? And it'll all be fine. It's no big deal. And then my field, my life, has room for lots of different things. But then he gets really, really hungry, and he goes out to his crowded field, and he pulls an ear of corn off the stalk, and he shucks it back, and guess what's there? Nothing. There's nothing to sustain him or his family. And John explains, that's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about what's competing in your life, in the field of your life. I have faith in Jesus, but I need a bunch of other stuff too in order to be okay. Look at verse 16. He says, for all that is in this world, for all this other things, the desire for other things, all that is in this world, and then he's going to list them. Here's his list of thorns. The desires of the flesh, the desires of the eyes, and the pride of life. That's not from God. It's from the world, that operating system, right? Now, that sounds really religious and kind of Bible speak, so I'm going to put that in gym language. Yay, because I know you look forward to that. All right, so look at this. Let's just break them down. See if this sounds or feels familiar. The desires of the flesh. The translation of the Bible I grew up with was this: the cravings of sinful man. It just sounds evil, right? But let me put it in gym language. It means this: I know what's wrong, I want it anyway. I know what God says. I know it's wrong. I know it's not good. I know it's wrong. I want it anyway. I own that t-shirt, I think, right? I know it's wrong. I'm going to do it. And let me explain it this way. And no one had to teach this to you. Everyone in the room is the same. Meaning this, is that it's that part inside of you that if you're in a room all by yourself and there's a wet paint sign, do not touch. It's like, it's wet. All right, right? You can't help it. I'm not throwing it. I get it. Right? It's that part of us that when we're driving down the road, we look, if there's no cop, we go 7 miles over. At least 7. I just figure the cops give you 5, you take 2 more. That's just what you do, all right? So that's just what you do. It's that part of you. Here's a great example, all right? It's that part of you, if I said for the next 20 minutes, nobody look at the back wall. Don't look. And here's what's going on inside of you. You go, why not? What's back there you don't want me to see? All right, here's another one. I can tell you right now, hey, for the next 20 minutes, do not touch your nose. Don't touch it. And here's the thing that's going to happen. You weren't even thinking about your nose 10 seconds ago, and now you're going, and then you're going to do it, right? It's happening right now around the room, right? So the cravings of sinful man basically can be this: don't tell me what to do. Don't tell me what to do. You can call it human nature. You can call it basic instinct. You can call it whatever. Nobody had to teach us that. And here, you're going to see a bunch of heads start nodding. Anybody who has or owns a toddler, right? You know exactly what I'm talking about. Because most of the babies in our life, their first word was, no, which is baby talk for, you're not the boss of me. Don't tell me what to do, right? I'll give you a great example, right? So there's just some, you don't have to teach babies this. We have one. I have a grandson. Did I mention I have a grandson? His name's Jonah. All right, so here's the thing. He's in the kitchen the other day. I was talking about it to his mom and dad about this the other day. But he's obsessed with wall sockets. He's obsessed with them. Like, I have to be there, right? And so we'll look at him and go, Jonah, don't go near that wall socket. And I can just look at him, all right? He's looking back at me, and I see what's going on in his evil, depraved little mind, all right? I know what's going on. And I know what he's thinking. Pop, you're not the boss of me, right? All right? And I know he's thinking, just leave the room. Go, old man, right? And so I know what's going to happen. I'm going to walk out of the room within 10 seconds. He's going to stick his finger in that, right? You know why? Because he's a sinner. He's an evil, depraved little child. He is, all right? And if I'm saying about him, he's better than all of you, so you are even worse. So that's just, here's my point. I do have a point. Is that he's one, but it's no different when you're 15 or 55 or 115, right? Just be honest. Wouldn't that describe a lot of our stories? This is how God's truth got choked out of my life and got me into trouble. I heard Jesus said this, or God said this in the Bible, or somebody told me this, and we heard what Jesus wanted us to do with our life, and our response was, no, you're not the boss of me. You don't tell me what to do. And here's what we did. We stuck our finger in the proverbial light socket in the wall, and not only did we get shocked, but we burned our house down. Some of us would go, that would be an accurate metaphor for my life. That describes it. How about this one? Look at this. The desire of the eyes, or the lust of the eyes. This is my version of that. I saw it, I had to have it. I saw it, I had to have it. This is basic marketing. for all you college grads, all right? There's an entire industry out there with one goal. When you get home and turn on your TV, this is how TV exists, discontentment. There's a whole industry out there, discontentment. I'm not even saying it's bad. It just is, all right? And here's their goal, to convince you that whatever you currently own is a piece of crap, and if you would just get this new one, your life would get better and you'd be content and you'd actually be happy. And you're going to sit in your living room, just like I'm going to sit in my living room watching ball games this afternoon, and here's what's going to happen in the commercial. I saw it. I have to have one of those. Before I saw it, I didn't even know it existed, but now that I've seen it, my life can't go on. My life cannot exist. My life won't be complete until I have one of those. And here's the thing is, you're going to go get one this week. You are. I know, because you're like me, all right? You're going to go get one, but here's what's going to happen. It's going to make some of you mad. You're going to get one. You're going to pull it in your driveway. You're going to take it to work or school or whatever, and you know what? Somebody got a bigger, better, faster one. And you're going to take that, oh, this thing that you thought, now, let's use a better word. You actually believed, you had faith, that's going to make me happy. You lean a big chunk of your life and your finances against this. I'm going to get that and I'm going to be okay. And in an instant, it gets moved to the piece of crap pile. And you're going to go look for a newer one. And that applies to everything in our lives, right? Everything in our lives, everything from iPhones to computers, right? Just everything, marriage, sex, plastic surgery, it's all the same. It's the lust of the eyes. I want what I don't have. I want that. She has what I want what she has. I saw it. I want it. I didn't even want it until I saw it. Now I've seen it. I will do whatever. I'll rearrange whatever I have to do in my life to get that, even if it pushes Jesus out of my life or chokes his truth out of my life. And again, wouldn't that describe some of our stories? Be honest. Think about your life. There's a lot. We can look back and we can go, there's a time in my life where I had faith. Think, right? You can look back. There was a season in your life where you would actually say, I had strong faith. I really did. I believed all that Jesus stuff. I leaned my life against him. I followed him. And then something or someone caught our eye. And we looked at Jesus and went, I'll be right back. Stay there. All right? And we meant to. And as we walked away, we went, this is no big deal. This isn't going to hurt anything. And right? And we went on. And then I'll be right back. You still there? And we kept walking. We kept walking. And now, today, we look back and we can't even see that anymore. We can't even see that life, that faith that we used to lean our whole lives against. And that would describe, I don't even know how to get back there. Right? One more. All right. The pride of life. The pride of life. And the version I grew up with is the boasting of what he has and does. I mean, I am what I have and I'm worth what I can do. And that word, that pride or that word boasting, it's the same word that we get in the English language, arrogance and cocky. And in the Greek language that this is written in, there was always a kind of a word, like a picture that goes with this. And the picture that goes with this is that guy that shows up on your doorstep or that girl, and she wants to sell you this magic potion and it does this and it lowers your cholesterol, makes you skinny, and gets spots out of your carpet and makes your dog nice. Whatever that is, it does all that. And you're going, just look at that. That makes sense. Jesus says, be careful. The other comparison he makes is like this beautiful, ornate casket. It's just beautiful, but it's inside, it's just death. And here's what goes. You look at that and you listen to the sales pitch and you go, it sounds good, it looks good, logical, that ought to make my life better. And then you go and you buy it and it always costs a lot and you pay more than you should, and then you get it and you try it and it doesn't work. But guess what? You don't get any money back, right? This is what Jesus says will choke him out of your life. Living your life in such a way that you're trying to convince yourself and everybody around you that you're something that you're not, simply because you can point to a big pile of possessions or a long list of accomplishments. This is the motto for a lot of our lives. If I can do it or get it, I'll feel better. And if I feel better, I must be better. Right? I mean, that makes sense. I mean, I must be a successful person. I spent my whole life trying to be successful. Now look at the square footage of my house and look at the model car I drive. And here's the thing is, you're going to wake up one day and you're going to be sitting in a big house by yourself. Right? Or my life must count for something. I mean, look at all the things I've done and all the trophies I have and all the awards I've won. But here's the thing. If you're going to wake up one day and you're going to realize, this is a really hard moment, you're the only one who cares. You really are. And the thing is, when you bring it up at cocktail parties and stuff like that, people look at you and go, that's awesome. But inside they're going, that's pathetic that you're still leaning your life against something that happened 20 years ago. Right? But that's my significance. That's my identity. My life matters because I have a lot of stuff. My life matters because I won and you lost, so I matter more than you. And there's a flip side to that. It goes like this too. There's something wrong with me if I don't have that or if I can't do that. And if you can do that, you must have more value than me. And that's, both are wrong. I have more worth or less worth based on what I do or don't have or can or can't do. Here's how John wraps this up. It's kind of a warning. He says this, and the world, so this operating system, is passing away along with all its desires that lead us They're passing away. But whoever does the will of God, holds on to God, I'm never ever going to let go. What he says is true, abides or lives forever. And look at that, the passing away, those desires and those emotions and those feelings. I got to have it or I'll just die. He says they're going to pass away. They're temporary. They're momentary. But if you get them wrong, that momentary event could have long-lasting consequences. An event that was one night or one time can last for the rest of your life. Maybe affect your eternity, which is true. Again, we're sitting there going, that's me, right? I do. That's what I say. I mean, how many of that? I just got to have this, and I just have to do this, and I just know if I can buy this or get this or achieve that or sleep with her or whatever that is, then I know it'll be better. I'll feel better, and then it'll be better. And just remember this moment, that nanosecond after you bought it or had it or slept with her, as soon as it was over, you had this horrible aha moment going, that was a horrible mistake. And that didn't fix anything. It made it worse. And here's the other thing is, now I'm stuck with the fallout of and the repercussions for the rest of my life. Because of that temporary thing that spun out of control. Again, how many of us describe our stories as, I'm spending now, in this life, right now, most of my time and energy trying to clean up or make up for the mistakes that I made because desires for other things spun out of control years ago. Specifically, my life got screwed up because my attitude was, don't tell me what to do. And I saw it and I had to have it. And I thought if I got it or did it or had her or slept with him or whatever, then my life would get better. And I was wrong. See, as a pastor of this place, I spend a lot of time listening to your stories. And you guys carry, we all do, we carry really, really, really heavy stories. Especially those that I'm trying to make a decision, I'm wrestling through these desires. And inevitably, almost every time the conversation gets around to some version of this, I know what God says to do. I just feel different. I'm not unclear about what God says is right and true. I mean, it's right there. He said it, all right? I know what God says to do. I just feel differently. And sometimes the conversation goes this way, and God gets the blame. If God didn't want me to do that, then why do you make me feel that way? This is on God, right? It's the old, why would God create somebody a certain way and then send them to hell for it? And the flip side of that goes like this, and I've used this one, right? If God doesn't want me to do this, then why doesn't he take the feelings away, right? I mean, I'm married to Robin, but if God didn't want me to sleep with her, then he shouldn't make me want to sleep with her, right? I mean, that's what goes on. That was hypothetical, for the record. All right, so, and see, whoa, I don't know where that, never mind. All right, so, and the answer to both of those, if God doesn't want me, and why did God, it's the same. Nowhere in the Bible, cover to cover, right? And test me on this if I'm wrong, right? Do we see God passing judgment on a person because of the situation they find themselves in, or for their feelings, or what they were actually being tempted to do? The only time God passes judgment is on how we respond to those situations and temptations and feelings. And nowhere do I ever find God saying, go ahead and do whatever you feel like doing. Unless I change how you feel, then stop. No, no. What I find in the Bible, cover to cover, is God says over and over, be really, really careful about this heart thing, this follow your heart thing. Because your heart, your feelings, your emotions, your desires, the Bible says, can be your greatest deceiver and can choke the truth of Jesus out of your life and lead you into trouble. And we live in a culture where the whole thing is, but aren't I supposed to follow my heart, right? Write this down. No! No. How many times has your heart led you over a cliff and you just can't get back, right? Be careful. So what should we do? What should we do, all right? We want our lives to produce. I think I speak for 100% of the room. I want a better life. I want my life to produce good results. I want a better this. I want a better marriage. I want to believe that God's truth is a better way. But what do I do when I have these two deals on the table? This is what God says, but I really want to do this, and I want to do it so much. I think I have to do this or I'll just die. What do I do then when it's different than what God says? We're going to look at one more guy, Paul. He writes this, and I love Paul. And here's why I love Paul. Because when Paul writes most of the stuff that you find in the Bible that Paul wrote, he didn't write it from some beachfront whatever with a little umbrella drink going, tell him this. You know, that's not it. He writes most of his stuff from a prison cell. He went to prison because he followed Jesus and was trying to help people, and they put him in prison. And he died there. He never got out. And he writes letters to people because he knows that they're suffering. And he says, I want to encourage you. And here's what he writes. He says this, no temptation has overtaken you that's not common to everybody. To man. All right. Can I tell you the number one feedback in the lobby I've gotten on email or in here in the lobby over the last 5 weeks? How did you know to talk about that today? How did you know that's what I was going through? It's like, did you bug my phone? No. No, it's like, how did you know? And here's the answer, because we're all going through we're all going through some different version or angle of the same thing. We really, really are. Translated this, the fact that you're being tempted to do something is not because you're a bad person. I hear that all the time. Why am I being tempted? I'm such a bad person. That shouldn't even be a temptation in my life. Let me tell you why you're being tempted to do something that's outside of the will of God. Because you're human. Because you're a human being. There will always be tension between what God says is true and what and how you feel. It will always be this way. This side of your funeral, anyway, right? The other side, I hear it gets better. But this side of your funeral, right? There will never come a time, and I've heard people teach this before, but there will never come a time when you can look at your life and sit back and go, that will never tempt me ever, ever again. Not true. There's never a time you can put it on cruise control and go, all I want to do now is skip down the lane with Jesus. It's me and Jesus, and I'll never, no. It's not going to happen this side of your funeral. As long as you have eyes and feelings and hormones and a physical body, you will always be caught in a tug of war. Because it's common to all of us. But here's the other thing that's just as true, more true than that. Look at the rest of that verse. But God is what? Wow, that was not very believable. All right? But God is faithful. All right? He's faithful. He is who he says he is, and he will keep every promise he's made. And he will not let you be tempted. Don't you wish the period was right there? Wouldn't that just be awesome? Just stop talking, Paul. Stop. Put your pen down. Right? Right? God's faithful. He won't let you be tempted beyond your ability. Right? See, the opposite of God is faithful is he's not. He's not who he says he is, and he won't show up. So you can't trust him. You're on your own. That's the opposite of that. But if God is faithful, and here's what he promises. He says, I will not let you be put in a situation, and I won't ever put you in a situation that is more than what I'm also willing to give you more than enough grace and strength to bear. I will let things, this is the other thing, I will actually cause some things to come into your life. And we are going to talk about that when I get to heaven. There's some things that I just got to look at. Jesus, I don't get it. I mean, it just makes more sense to me. I prayed, you should have just taken that out of my life. It just makes more sense. And then Jesus will go, well, Jim, if I have to explain myself here, and he'll explain it, I'll go, oh, that's why you're God and I'm not. So anyway, this is just true. So he will let things in your life. He will cause things in your life that you will not understand. But he says this, I promise, I will not put you in a no-win situation. It'll feel like it. It's not. How can you say that? Look at the rest of this. But with the temptation, he, God, will also provide the way of escape that you may be able to endure it. That's a promise. What God is promising is this. When you're tempted, not if, because it is a matter of time. When you're tempted, you'll find yourself in situations where you're faced with what feels like this is impossible. I can't win. I have to do this other thing over here. Here's what God faithfully promises. He will either provide a way out. I'm going to get you out of it. I'll change your circumstances so you don't have to deal with this anymore. Or, and I vote for that one, by the way, or he will provide what you need so that as you stand there in your circumstances and face them, they won't crush you. Kind of like going to the gym and the weight's coming down. And it's, I got you, I got you, I got you. That's what he promises. See, that's what Jesus promises to do. That's what he promises to do. I'll take care of you. I got you. I'll give you a strength. I'll get you out of it, or I'll give you the strength to go through it. I will not abandon you. Now, here's the thing. This is where this whole parable metaphor has been going the whole time. Just like seeds that are thrown on different kinds of soil. Some land on pavement, some land on shallow soil, some on good soil, and some in the middle of a bunch of thorns, okay? Even if you're sitting in here right now going, that's true, I believe that. In 5 minutes when you get up and walk out that door, it doesn't mean anything. Oh, let me say it this way. Just because God provides a way out doesn't mean that I always take it. He gave me a way out. There's the door, Jim. Run. And I looked back and went, no. Sometimes God opens the exit door and we choose to close it. I'm staying. I know. Thank you, God. Clear. No. Go away. I'm going to stay.